doctor advised him not to fast, and now he is confident enough. In the event that an individual is confident or he has genuine fear that maybe fasting will have a negative effect, of course, he cannot fast and it will not be permissible to fast.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh. Let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on Arabi English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the Islamic laws based on Ayatollah Khamenei and in the month of Ramadan and related to the month of Ramadan and fasting. Well, Sheikh Javid, you know, if some people are suffering from kidney stones, and in order to, let's say, avoid the stones to get bigger and bigger, they need to prevent it from calcifying in their kidneys. So, and they are usually told by the doctors and the physicians to consume a lot of fluids and a lot of water, as the doctors have, let's say, prohibited, in fact, those individuals from fasting. What is their duty regarding this blessed month of Ramadan?
Well, if the treatment of illness depends or let's say requires that you drink water and consume fluids during the day, then it's not obligatory for you to fast, you know, because you have to take care of your health first, and health comes first. So you have to drink as much water as you can to, let's say, to protect your kidney and to, let's say, get better. So if drinking water during the day is necessary, you should drink water and take care of your health.
I see. Okay. Likewise, diabetics are somehow required to take insulin injections once or twice a day, depending on, in fact, the severity of their cases. Also, their meals should be or should not be delayed and taken at long intervals, all right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they might get into a coma or get fits. This is why physicians advise them, Sheikh Javid, to have four meals a day sometimes.
Yeah.
So would you please shed some light on their validity of their fasting?
You know, if you know that abstaining from eating and drinking from dawn to sunset is going to be harmful to your health, so or maybe you fear, because sometimes you are not sure, you do not know for sure, so you have genuine fear that maybe, if you stop eating or if you restrain yourself from eating and drinking, you are going to suffer. So in this case, obviously, fasting is not obligatory, and it will not be, permissible for you to fast. Now, generally speaking, it is not permissible for an individual to fast if fasting is going to be injurious or harmful to your health. And even if it is not, if you do not know that, fasting, if you have that fear, it is enough. And if fasting is going to, let's say, hamper or slow down the recovery,
yes,
then again it's not permissible. You might recover sooner or later, but fasting might slow down the process of recovering.
Mm-hmm.
then in that case, again, it's not permissible to fast.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javed, for your nice contribution to this program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Thank you, my dear audience, for listening to this program, especially in this blessed month. So please keep us in your prayers and supplication. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech in this holy month of Ramadan. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
سال میتونه آدم خوبی باشه، تو کل سال میتونه پاک باشه، اما فضای ماه رمضان یه فضایی است که خیلی راحت تر میشه خوب بود.
A person can be pure and righteous during the year. However, in the month of Ramadan, this chance is given to us more than any other time of the year. Consider a house which is many rooms and parts, for instance, living room, dining room, kitchen, etc. In any part of them, we can wash. However, the special place for washing is bathroom. In other words, washing and cleaning oneself is much easier in the bathroom compared to other parts of the house.
تو کل سال آدم میتونه پاک باشه، خوب باشه. اما این یه ماه.
Now, during a year, we can be pure and righteous. However, the holy month of Ramadan is like the washing place that helps you to be clean much easier. All the facilities are provided for us in the month of Ramadan to cleanse our souls. Of course, this does not mean to sit still and do nothing. A kind of motion is needed in the holy month of Ramadan. If you start purification of the soul during the month of Ramadan, then through action and practice, you can continue it during all other months of the year. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech in this holy month of Ramadan, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
In the limelight.
Long COVID sufferers need a large-scale recovery trial, fast-tracked to offer them some answers about treatments. Many of the responses offered when they get to the front of the queue at long COVID clinics are about readjustment and rehabilitation in light of their new disability. They do not want readjustment. They want their lives back. Here we present you an article in this regard, written by Danny Altman, a professor of immunology at Imperial College London, under the headline, Vaccines are no match for long COVID. Treating it is science's next great challenge. Please stay with us to hear more about the story. Whatever your standpoint on whether the pandemic is over or what living with the virus should mean, it is clear some manifestation of COVID-19 will be with us for some time to come. Not least for the estimated 1.7 million people in the UK living with long COVID, and lest any who made a full and rapid recovery from infection still wonder whether long COVID might be a self-reported creation of the indolent. This is now a large, well-documented convergent cluster of clear psychological symptoms, and it is common to every part of the globe affected by the COVID-19. Danny Altman wrote, "Many sufferers of my acquaintance were keen cyclists, runners, and skiers, but are now disabled and deprived of their former passions, while some are unable to resume their former professions. Doctors and scientists now consider this a recognized part of the SARS-CoV-2 symptom profile. Many of the most severe and enduring long haulers derive from the first UK infection wave just before the initial lockdown in March 2020. Even though it was clear from the outset that the risk of long COVID was not correlated simply with the severity of infection, there was every reason to hope that, with the larger scale rollout of effective vaccines and more recent waves of infection dominated by somewhat less severe variant, there would be few additions to the sufferers joining long COVID support groups." Danny Altman said, "We thought that the number of long COVID cases developing might be lower when most cases were breakthrough cases in the vaccinated or infections in vaccinated or partially vaccinated children. Sadly, far from any substance in new long COVID cases, the big ongoing caseloads of the Delta, Omicron, and BA1 waves have brought a large cohort of new sufferers." Altman noted, "From published data, the chances of long COVID in those who are vaccinated but suffer breakthrough infections may be halved. But when you apply this to the huge waves we've experienced, 3.5 million people infected at a given time, each 3.5 million cases becomes another 175,000 people with long COVID." "These waves have disproportionately affected primary and secondary schools, and many of the new sufferers are children." Sammy McFarland at longcovidkids.org reports a constant stream of new members across its support services, many developing long COVID after 2, 3, or 4 bouts of reinfection, having escaped it first time around. Also, the symptom spectrum may be shifting from the earlier waves, with more reports of sight, hearing, and motor function deficits, along gastrointestinal pain, joint pain, rashes, swelling, and fatigue. This is a tangible price being paid for turning a blind eye to the high incidence of cases in the schools over recent months. With such large numbers having been infected at any given time in recent months, many suffering repeat infections at 3 or 4 week intervals, the potential legacy of chronic disabling illness is an aspect making this utterly different from most other winter respiratory pathogens, such as flu or colds. Nobody is certain whether long COVID from the current period will be quite the same as the early waves, but this is an experiment that none of us would wish to do on our children. It has been consistently difficult to assess the trajectory of people's recovery from persistent symptoms, which has entailed assessing those whose symptoms lasted 3 months but not 6, compared with the smaller subset without improvement at 18 to 24 months. A team at the University of Toronto followed up patients with persistent symptoms after infection during the 2003 SARS outbreak. Many of these showed little recovery several years later. Altman wrote, "If this trend were extrapolated to our current Omicron wave, the effects on education, the workforce, and healthcare provision would be huge." Danny Altman said, "It is still early days for long COVID research. Our scientists' strength in epidemiology research through survey data, such as the Office for National Statistics, REACT to and ZOE, put us at the forefront of counting and recognizing the importance of long COVID, leading to the early push for dedicated clinics. This was important, but sufferers have understandably become wary of questionnaires and surveys looking for tangible progress on mechanisms and therapeutic trials. The demand for less observation, more intervention." He said, "In the early days of long COVID, we and others put forward working hypotheses to explain the disease process. These span the effects of the virus itself, causing enduring damage and a scarring in diverse body organs, viral persistence, autoimmunity causing a range of symptoms, and many more. Relatively small-scale studies have produced some interesting support for each of these, but we still lack the overarching paradigm or way of understanding the disease that would facilitate comprehensive diagnostic testing, best care pathways, and curative therapeutics." People with long COVID led the charge to identify, characterize, and trigger a research agenda for the new condition through hard work and proactive social media networks. Their attention and wrath is now focused on impatience to test potential treatments. There is pressure, sometimes manifest as patients traveling abroad for costly experimental treatments, to trial everything from antivirals and anti-spike, monoclonal antibodies to anticoagulants and apheresis, a complex procedure to remove possible microclots from blood. As was appreciated from the results of randomized controlled trials, or RCTs, for original COVID-19 treatments, Sometimes approaches that have been heavily publicized do not pan out, while others are convincingly shown to work and change global management of patient symptoms such as the drugs tocilizumab and dexamethasone. Long COVID sufferers need a large-scale recovery trial, fast-tracked to offer them some answers about treatments. Many of the responses offered when they get to the front of the queue at long COVID clinics are about readjustment and rehabilitation in light of their new disability. They do not want readjustment. They want their lives back. Some current research programs offer initial steps in this direction. The Stimulate ICP trial at a University College Hospital will compare effectiveness of antihistamines, rivaroxaban, that is an anti-clotting drug, and colchicine, that is an anti-inflammatory. A clinical trial at Oxford University is investigating whether a drug called AXA-1125 can treat fatigue and muscle weakness. Danny Oldman concluded, "Our thinking about SARS-CoV-2 and long COVID and our response to it has had to shift and readjust, virtually on a monthly basis. This is now a highly infectious upper respiratory virus able to reinfect repeatedly, an outcome that wasn't expected early in the pandemic. If we renege on mitigations as each round of infection draws more of all ages into chronic disability, this may be the blunder that we rue for decades to come. Even after the original wave of lockdowns and deaths has become a distantly remembered nightmare."
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين. Welcome, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program For Humanity, and the topic today is Hollywood, conditioning of the subconscious mind and extermination of human rights. This is Sheikh Ali Hemani from Qom. So when we talk about extermination of human rights, we're talking about the free will of human beings. And so far, we discussed about Milgram's experiment and how the findings of this experiment is being used by the corporate world, is being used by the politicians, is being used by the media to influence us and control our free will. So we were talking about one of the techniques that is followed by the corporate world is that they say, follow the one you like. And based on this very message, they introduce the influencers, and these influencers tell us what to behave, how to behave, what to pick, what not to pick, way to go, way not to go, what coffee to drink, what coffee not to drink. And they are being paid by the corporate world to tell us what to choose and what not to choose. So it's the corporate world that tells the influencers the messages that are required to be delivered to the people. the messages that are required to be dictated to the people. And these influencers are the celebrities of today's world. If you look at Logan Paul, you know, he was the number two guy on YouTube, making the most money and the most getting the most number of subscribers, right? He was called for a conference where he was meeting his followers, you know, huge gathering of hundreds and thousands of people. And right in the middle of this conference, he makes a statement. He makes a declaration. He says, for next 1 month, I'm going to try and be gay. I'm going to try and be homosexual, right? With this single message, I don't know whether he tried or not, but with this single message, all those people who were standing on the borderline deciding whether they should come out, tell their parents, tell their friends that they are not straight, they're gay, they all had the courage to come out and declare. And all of a sudden, the number of people indulging into gay practices increased. Why? Because one influencer decided to experiment this behavior, not even come out and say that I'm gay, just experiment this behavior. And this gave courage for so many others to come out and declare that they are gay. And this is what I'm talking about, that the corporate world pays them, tells them, and defines for them what needs to be communicated. And they also define for us that who do we need to follow? Which influencer do we need to follow? And that's why you see that these are the guys who are controlling our free will and controlling our choices. And the media and the corporate world is the one that tells us who to follow. It could be Transformers, it could be Mickey Mouse, it could be Avengers or Batman or Spider-Man. Even Sherlock Holmes, all right? Or they might even tell us to pick one of the singers. They might say, follow Katy Perry, you know, because, or Ed Sheeran, or anybody else, Beyonce, or whoever. Just, they want us to like someone. They want us to follow them. They want us to follow their own trends. They want us to follow the trends of these influencers by looking at them, wearing what they wear, dressing the way they dress up, follow what they follow, so that the corporate world benefits out of it. They make the money out of it. They make the profit out of this. And the more profit they make, the more power they have in their hands. The more profiling they do for the population, the more profiling they do for people, the more power and more profit they have in their hands. Let's take a quick break, come back in some time, and discuss it further about why the predictability gives more power in the hands of the corporate world and the political world.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were talking about Milgram's experiment and how the corporate world uses it. And we were talking about the level of predictability that is in the hands of the corporate world and the political world based on all the information that we upload at the various social media websites. And this predictability allows them to control our free will. Now, what would happen if we are unpredictable? Imagine that there's a huge population or a group of people who are absolutely unpredictable. When a group of people are unpredictable, then it becomes extremely difficult for the corporate world and the political world to manage them, to control them, to guide them, to lead them to a particular place. Why? Because they are unpredictable. You don't know how they would behave and how they would react in a particular environment, in a particular scenario. And this is what is their biggest fear. A population, a set of population that is unpredictable. And that's why all the strategy, all this planning, all this expenditure, all this millions of dollars that are being spent is to understand the human behavior and make it as predictable as possible. when the human behavior is predictable and it is in favor of them, then it is in their benefit and they can sit back and relax. But imagine human behavior is absolutely unpredictable. That is the biggest fear. But imagine another segment where the human behavior is predictable, but it is not in their favor. In this scenario as well, they find it problematic. For example, take Muslims. Muslims are predictable. They know that Muslims follow Islam. They follow the Holy Quran. They know that Muslims think of alcohol as haram. They think of a set of meat that are haram. They are in favor of hijab and all the other rulings of Islam. So they know that this is how the Muslims behave. But this is not in favor of the corporate and the political world. So this is again a problem for them. And they want this to be not just predictable, but in favor of them. So that when it's in their favor, it's easy for them to manage. However, Muslims, they, according to Islam, we should submit to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and not to anybody else. And this is a problem for them. They want people to obey them. And that is why this whole this whole effort that is being put in to control the mass, to make it predictable, to profile them, to categorize them so that it becomes easy for them to manage the masses and lead them in a particular way. And there are no surprises for them. If the masses are unpredictable, then every day is a new surprise. You never know how people are going to behave. But if the masses are predictable, if the free will is under control, if you've already conditioned their subconscious mind, and you know that with a single external stimuli, with a single external message, you can manipulate their behavior, you can manipulate their choices, you can manipulate their decisions, then it becomes much, much more easier for people to behave in a particular way. Remember the message from George W. Bush after the 9/11 incident and after the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. He asked the Americans to go and live their life normally, go shopping and spend money, right? So this is again authoritative figure asking people to live normally and spend money so that the corporates can benefit, so that the political world can benefit. And again, one of the findings of Milgram's experiment is that when an authoritative figure asks you to do something, you blindly follow and obey it because it is required for you to do so. Inshallah, we will continue in the next episode. Until then, fi amanillah, God bless you all.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The UK has announced a controversial deal with Rwanda to send illegal immigrants and asylum seekers to the East African country. The British government claims this scheme, which is worth $156 million, would have stopped smugglers from sending thousands of desperate migrants on dangerous journeys across the English Channel every year. Over 28,000 migrants and refugees have crossed the English Channel in 2021. That's three times higher than the year before. In November last year, 27 people died while trying to reach the UK when their boat sank in the worst disaster to occur on the Channel. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson hailed the deal with Kigali, saying the East African country with a sketchy human rights record is one of the safest countries in the world, globally recognized for its record of welcoming and integrating migrants. Rwanda already hosts some 140,000 refugees in six refugee camps. However, rights groups and refugee organizations swiftly slammed what they called a cruel, inhumane, and neo-colonial plan. They also questioned both its costs to British taxpayers and its effect on migration. According to a recent poll, 60% of the British public is dissatisfied with the Johnson government's migration policy. The UN's refugee agency has also voiced opposition, saying people fleeing persecution should not be treated like commodities. The world body stated that such arrangements simply shift asylum responsibilities, evade international obligations, and are contrary to the letter and spirit of the Refugee Convention. Others have criticized Rwanda's human rights record, accusing the government of torturing, intimidating, and assassinating their political opponents, and persecuting marginalized people. Johnson said the deal will become a new international standard in handling migration, but human rights groups have warned that the plan could set a dangerous trend for other Western countries to adopt their offshore asylum schemes.
Well, Britain has a good history of trading in human beings. As you know, the whole sort of movement of Africans to North America, Britain was a leading player in shipping slaves from Africa to North America and to Caribbean islands. So Britain has a track record of trading in human beings. So one could, if you like, describe it in that manner. But I think the evil aspect of what's really happening in 2022, that may have happened 200 years ago, and when later on slavery was banned. But the reality is that perhaps we are living in a new epoch of slavery at this time.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has vowed to curb the English Channel crossings. However, there has been a drastic increase in the number of people arriving on British shores on small boats in recent years. The government passed a Nationality and Borders Bill that would make it a criminal offence to enter the UK illegally, and it would introduce life sentences for people smugglers. But The UN's refugee agency criticized the bill, saying it would penalize most refugees seeking asylum in the country and would create an asylum model that undermines established international refugee protection rules and practices. Meanwhile, the refugee deal with Rwanda comes as more Ukrainians arrive in the UK through different visa programs that the Johnson government has rolled out in the wake of the Russia-Ukraine war. Over 55,000 visas have been issued to refugees fleeing the conflict in Ukraine so far. This clearly shows a contradiction between the proposed policy and the British government's attitude toward Ukrainian refugees.
Reality is that the British government is acting in a very racist manner as well. They might say that, okay, it was sort of media correspondents who depicted the European Ukrainian refugees in that manner. But the reality is that the implementation of this policy perhaps smacks of what I call racism, clear and without any sort of dilution to it.
Unlike what the British government claims, those seeking to cross the English Channel and land on British soil are not illegal economic migrants, but are mainly those who have escaped bloodshed, war and terror. They are people fleeing oppression and violence from Afghanistan, West Asia or even Europe. They are exercising their right under the UN Refugee Convention, which the UK was a founding signatory of, to seek asylum in a country of their choosing. And let's not forget that they are no different from Ukrainian refugees.
Israeli forces have stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and attacked the Palestinian worshippers there. The raid began at dawn on Friday when Israeli forces entered the compound through the Moroccan Gate, also known as the Mughrabi Gate, throwing stun grenades and shooting rubber bullets at the crowd indiscriminately. 400 Palestinians were arrested. Media reports said the Israeli forces also attacked paramedics and press crews, chased them in the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque, and beat a number of them. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society reported that 152 fasting Palestinians had been transferred to hospitals in the occupied Al-Quds for injuries as a result of the raid. Following the Friday prayers, people held rallies in the Gaza Strip in solidarity with the Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
They want it for themselves. They want the Palestinians gone. They want Islam to be gone from Palestine and Christianity too, everything except Judaism. So really, they don't mind having this as a flashpoint for them, as a center of dispute. They want this dispute to go on until they win. That's what they're looking for. And every time they bring settlers there to cause trouble, it's part of what they see as a continuing war for their control of the land. That's what this is about.
The regime has stepped up its deadly acts of aggression across the Palestinian territories since the beginning of Ramadan, as a result of which Palestinians put up a stronger resistance to counter the aggression. The events unfolding in the occupied territories are reminiscent of clashes between the Israeli forces and Palestinians in the West Bank last year that led to an 11-day war between the resistance groups in Gaza and Israel. Over 250 Palestinians were killed in the war, many of them were women and children. Observers now believe that more confrontations are imminent. As the pressure mounts, Palestinians have stepped up their retaliatory operations against Israelis. Over the past 3 weeks, Palestinians have carried out 4 such retaliatory operations, killing over a dozen Israelis. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has given the regime's forces a free hand to crack down on Palestinians. He has also called on Israeli civilians with gun licenses to carry weapons in public.
they can find ways to make the Israeli occupation painful. And already, actually, quite a few Israelis over the last decade have emigrated elsewhere. You have Israeli immigration into Europe and the United States and to Australia. Possibly as many as a million Israelis have done that. If the Palestinians can make it painful enough for the Israelis might just disappear.
When some Arab states announced a normalization of ties with Israel, they claimed that their moves will help the Palestinian cause. But the events of the past couple of years have shown that the only contribution their newly established ties with Tel Aviv made to Palestinians has been even more suffering. In the absence of any accountability, Israel is expected to put even more pressure on the people of Palestine. But the Palestinians are indicating that they remain steadfast to keep fighting against the Israeli occupation with or without international support.
Racial tensions are running high in Grand Rapids, Michigan, after police this week released footage of a white officer lying on the back of an unarmed black man, shooting him in the head. Patrick Leoya, 26, was killed on April 4th after a struggle during a traffic stop. State police are investigating the incident. The officer is currently on administrative leave pending the outcome of the investigation. Authorities say he would not be identified unless criminal charges are pressed against him. The family of Leoya called the video of the shooting, quote, the most horrifying thing they've ever seen, and asked for the officer's name to be released. The shooting has led to protests in the area, with activists expressing grief and frustration with years of inaction on policing issues by Grand Rapids leaders.
Given the U.S.'s long history of police brutality, from Rodney King to George Floyd and now today, we can't be shocked. And I think that the black community should and is justified in being angry at the establishment and seeking methods outside of the establishment and the political structure for seeking change.
The fatal shooting of the unarmed black man by the white officer is the latest on a very long list of similar incidents. Police killings of black men have dominated national debates in recent years, particularly after the 2020 murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, which triggered persistent protests across America. The deep-rooted problem lingers on. So far this year, over 250 people have been fatally shot by on-duty police officers nationwide. The latest case is another bitter reminder that the system in the United States has failed to take measures to resolve the pressing problem. The April 4th shooting has once again brought deadly police violence in America under the spotlight. Civil rights organization, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, has been quick to react. The NAACP, which tries to advance justice for African Americans, said in a statement that the shooting is horrifying and deeply frustrating because Americans had meaningful legislation designed to avoid exactly what they are witnessing in this week's police video. It said the involved officer has blood on his hands, and so do the senators who killed the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. The piece of legislation was passed by the U.S. House of Representatives in March 2021, but bipartisan negotiations in the U.S. Congress over the police reform bill ended in stalemate. The sweeping legislation was passed by the House amid outcry after the murder of George Floyd. It would have banned chokeholds and qualified immunity for law enforcement. It would have also created national standards for policing in an effort to increase accountability.
Lack of efforts to reform the system that are coming from the top. There's no real incentive for legislators to reform when they are benefiting off of the corrupt policing system and corrupt judicial system that this country has. There's also a lack of struggle in the organizations, a lack of structure in the organizations that are struggling against police brutality.
The failure to pass the police reform has been considered as a setback for the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden, who had energetically supported the legislation. President Biden has faced growing calls to sign an executive order to reform the police but has failed to act. Experts believe ethnic minorities in America, especially African Americans, are facing a very deep-rooted problem that will not be resolved anytime soon. Observers have largely attributed this to the racist roots of American policing and social structures.
Nearly 7 weeks have passed since the start of the war in Ukraine. Russia is now focusing on taking territory in the eastern regions of the country. Ukraine and Russia are building up their military forces in the eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk.
It's a very serious situation. The fact that the Russian forces are there have made significant moves, especially in the east of Ukraine and other parts, is unacceptable to the United States, and they're not prepared to negotiate. And I believe that their advice to Zelensky, docked again to Biden today to assure him of about, what was $130 million more worth of equipment, that they want them to continue fighting, to continue resisting, but they're not going to send any troops there.
Over the past weeks, Ukraine has enjoyed the support of Western powers, especially the United States. Western nations have sent different types of weapons to Ukraine worth millions of dollars. The U.S. is to announce $750 million in new military aid for Ukraine. The new military aid package would likely include military equipment such as unmanned surface vehicles, Mi-17 helicopters, howitzers, and protective equipment against possible chemical attacks. The Pentagon has hosted leaders from the top eight U.S. weapons manufacturers to discuss the industry's capacity to help arm Ukraine, even if Russia's invasion lasts as long as 2 years.
So there will be a lot more people dying because the United States is insistent, I think, that Putin's forces have to be forced out of Ukraine before this is all over. And it's not going to be happening anytime soon.
Resupplying as well as planning for a longer war were expected to be discussed at the meeting. The Pentagon has said smaller systems such as Javelin anti-tank missiles and Stinger anti-aircraft missiles have proved to be the most useful weapons. Washington and its Western allies have been shipping these weapons to Ukraine on a nearly daily basis. A partnership between Lockheed Martin and Raytheon Technologies makes the anti-tank Javelin. Raytheon manufactures the Stinger, which shoots down aircraft. Ukraine is ramping up its campaign for military aid even as the U.S. accelerates shipments of weapons to Kiev. Arms lobbyists and their underlings in Congress and the Pentagon are scrambling now to unlock more funds for the military-industrial complex to pump out weapons to Europe.
Unless there are other parties within the world community and also even within NATO to resist this type of policy, it's going to be a very long and costly war, and the cost is going to be borne by the world community, which will suffer in increasing food prices, increasing energy, increasing starvation for millions of people.
But amid the unanimous support for Ukraine, there are critical voices that have been raised against supplying weapons to Ukraine. It's argued that the money channeled to the military industry is used to fuel more bloodshed in Ukraine. Hawks in the West lobby recklessly for NATO to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine.
They believe that a world empire effectively can be created, in which the United States is the fundamental maker of the rules. Now, every attempt to create an empire in the world has ended up in either failure or disaster, and they haven't learned those lessons.
That could be a direct military confrontation between Russia and Ukraine. It's also feared that a nuclear war is also becoming a possibility. A recent poll has shown that the U.S. is being drawn into an all-out war with Russia.
in the limelight.
The West insists on giving Kiev weapons, even though it knows this measure will not help bring peace back to Ukraine. Increasingly, Western leaders contribute to the destabilization of Eastern Europe by promoting the continuation of conflict through supplying weapons to the Ukrainian armed forces and neo-Nazi militias. Dear listeners, we now present you an article in this regard, written by Lucas Lerose, a researcher in social sciences and geopolitical consultant. The piece is titled, Giving Weapons to Ukraine Endangers Global Peace. Please stay with us.